I'm Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Molly Grimes in her home near Swansea on Wednesday, the 12th of November 2014, for the Mithras Oral History Project with Mola and Bloomberg. So, Molly, I mentioned your name just then, but if you could introduce yourself now and give us your year of birth, please, that'd be great.
Just Molly Grimes. You don't want the background.
If you could just say when and where you were born, that would be useful.
I was born in South Africa, Durban, 4th of January, 1926.
And just in one sentence, if you could let me know what your mother and father did during their adult lives.
My father was born in Burma. He was mostly in the army in India, and he was a civil servant after that. My mother was a governess who went out to India to look after the children and teach the children of the Governor General. That's how they met.
And how would you summarise what you did during your working life?
Well, just as a secretary. Most of my working life is nothing I can talk about, really. Life took off when I grew older.
And what year did you come to England?
To settle, 1960.
That's great, thank you. So we'll go directly now to talking about your visit to the Temple of Mithras site. So if you could just start off by telling me what your overriding impression was of the site on that day in 1954.
Well, it was a very grey day. We couldn't see much because there were the boards, that were covering some of the work until we got round the other side. But of course, the crowd were quite happy to chat away and eat their food as they were going along, because it was a long time to wait. And we didn't get away from there before 9, I don't think. Anyway, when we finally got there, it was 3.5 hours, I think.
So, goodness. So you're saying we, so you obviously went with at least one other person.
Yes, my colleague at work.
And you, I think when you got in touch with us, you said you had hurtled there from work, or you dashed there from work.
Oh, yes. She said, you're coming down to see this. She said, you're not going anywhere until you've seen this wonderful tick. We'll go down there. And we all took our sandwiches and everything. And so we stayed there. And she said, you can't go away from this country, because I think I was planning to go back to South Africa. You can't go away, she said, until you've seen this. Because she was very bossy. But otherwise I might have not gone. But we got on well with all the crowd, and then, of course, when we got there, it was just a man leaning on his spade. And she said, where is this lovely head? He said, you're looking at it, love. He was a character.
So that was a builder?
Yes.
Oh, a digger, sorry.
Digger?
Yeah.
Peter said he must have been Mick. Mick, I should say, sorry then. Yes.
And when your friend said, where is this wonderful head, what head was she talking about?
I think it was Serapis, or what was the other one? Not Mithras. There was another head.
Minerva.
In the marbles there. But we weren't sure, but we said it was all about in the paper, about this wonderful head. And she said, we must ask about this head, because I don't think Mithras's head had come out then. A couple of days later they found, I think from memory, a couple of days later they found Mithras's head. I think that's how it went. I think Audrica uncovered Mithras, but I'm not sure.
So your friend had found out about the site being excavated?
Yes, it was all in the newspapers. You couldn't avoid it, it was headlines everywhere. But I would have thought of going, but I didn't really have the courage to go and do it on my own. But she was quite bossy, which I'm glad of. she's gone now.
So was archaeology... You said you would have gone anyway. You'd seen it in the news and you would have gone if you'd had the courage. Would you have gone because you were specifically interested in archaeology or because it was a public event?
No, archaeology. It's always been a yen of mine, but I didn't really know that we could do something with it. It's only through getting to know Peter and Audrey that I got involved.
So, going back to the queue, which you said you remember as lasting 3.5 hours before you got into the site. So there was a lot going on while you were queuing, presumably. Yes. Were you chatting to people?
Yes, everybody was chatting. But I don't remember any particular thing except about the man with the head.
And once you were in the site, given that you were already interested in archaeology, so you might have had a bit of a feel for what you were seeing, because obviously for some people who are complete lay people, it's difficult, isn't it? But it sounds like you might have been able to make a little bit of sense of it.
Well, yes. I mean, we could see all the markings aren't, you know, with the rulers and things like that, and holes here and there, and ancient buildings, which we didn't understand, of course. Didn't mean a thing to us until it was pointed out. But Peter wasn't there that night to explain anything. I think somebody did a bit of explaining, I don't know who it was. But, you know, it was very interesting. And I really felt deprived that I hadn't taken up more of it, you know, done better at school. But, those things we always forget afterwards. You know, if you get a chance to do things at school that you want to do, as against doing what your mother wants you to do and your father wants you to do. My mother would said, no, you're going to be a shorthand typist. Not much better for you. I wanted to do much more interesting things like languages and archaeology.
So you said earlier you always had a yen for archaeology.
Yes.
So at school it was something that you
yes.
were able to pinpoint already as something that you were interested in.
There wasn't much at school to pinpoint archaeology because it wasn't that kind of school. It was a commercial school which only taught English grammar and shorthand typing and everything like that, but nothing that interested me. So I didn't do very well in it. History I liked, but it was very dull.
when you were on the site and you had somebody explaining it to you a little bit, what were you feeling? Can you remember any sensations coming up about that?
Not really.
Experience.
I thought it was really so absorbing, but it was too much that I didn't know about rather than too much to take in. But I just wanted to be involved in it, but you couldn't in these days. Well, at least I didn't think you could. There we are. Sad tale, really. Wasted life.
Not at all, and we'll come on to that in a little bit, because you've got a huge tale to tell, as well as what you've already described.
Yeah.
But just sticking a little bit with that very specific day of going to visit the temple.
Yes.
It was obviously during the week. It was during the working week, because you went after work.
Yes, yes.
Can you remember which day of the week it was?
I suppose it could have been a Friday, because we wouldn't have had to work the next morning. Mm. But I wasn't sure. I should think so, because travelling afterwards, you know. Yes. Then we went to Winston Churchill's funeral too, not long afterwards, 65. Not quite a while afterwards, yes. That was 54, that's 11 years afterwards. And that was 5 hours. All over the bridges of London we queued right round. Amazing.
And, I mean, that sounds absolutely remarkable. I'm going to come back to the Temple of Mithras for now, though. C- Can you remember your journey? Where were you working at the time to go and to visit the site from?
I was working for the Furniture Development Council, which was in John Adam Building, near the Shellmakes House. It's a little old building there. It was built with John and Robert Adam, the Richard Fireplace people. I don't know if it's there still. It's probably should be listed, because there was their original building. And the gas man used to come and light the gas lamps every night around there. No longer, I think it's only around the cathedral, in Catholic Cathedral, I think, where there's still a gas lamp where they come around and light. Well, probably it's automatic now.
So how would you have got from those offices to...
Oh, what, on the underground from Strand? Yes, I don't know the journey. Strand would have gone, well, would have gone down to the city. The nearest spot, I think. Well, she would have worked it out, Cynthia. She was a real go-getter. Yes.
And what about later, Molly? Because we've mentioned briefly about the temple being resited, and I know you went back to South Africa for a bit. Were you back in London when the temple was resited, and did you go and visit it at any point after that?
No, I didn't visit. No, no. No. I don't know why. But they said it was somewhere around Cannon Street way, wasn't it? And I know somebody had said they'd been down there, and there wasn't much to see, because that was such a... And of course the Barbican was built over the whole thing. Such a ghastly building. I know you're in it, but it was a dreadful building. But anyway, it's all history now. I'd never know my way around that place. But I think the best part of it is the theatre, isn't it? It's got wonderful acoustics there. Yes, I had a friend there who lived a long time. She moved now to Manchester. She was Peter's auditor. Very good. She still continues to do my taxes, which I can't do. I hope I said arithmetic anyway. She lived in number 3. I can't remember what part now, there's so many parts of it. Yes.
Well, let's go back to the romance of archaeology.
Mm.
So you said it's something you were always interested in, and you didn't know for a long time that it was possible to volunteer on archaeological sites. And when you went to visit the Temple of Mithras, you said Grimes wasn't there that day.
No. Well, it could have been. I don't think so. By the time we were there, he'd probably gone off. Because it was dark.
So the first time you met W.F. Grimes, or Peter Grimes, as everybody called him, and Audrey Williams, was when you went to volunteer in the 70s, was it?
No. I met him once in my boss's office in London. I didn't meet him as such, but I was introduced to him and gave him tea. But that was the only first and only time that I'd seen him.
And what year was that?
Good Lord. Must have been in the 60s. Before they came back to Swansea anyway. Yes, because I came back to Swansea in 1971, and I think they came after 73. Peter had retired about, he was, I can't think, was he 70 when he retired? 70 when he retired. What, you don't have to retire early, do you?
Well, I don't think you did then. No. I think there's all sorts of rules now about retiring later. I'm not sure. Yes.
Because he was over retirement age. I think he was about 70, just 70, I think, when he came back to Swansea. And then they lived in one house on the corner until their house was free. And then they moved back into their own house, Audrey's house. But that's where we stayed. That's where I lived with him. And sadly, she died.
On that note, actually, I'm just going to take you back to when Peter Grimes, W.F. Grimes, came to your boss's offices. You made him a cup of tea, and you mentioned earlier what the tea was like that he particularly liked.
Pale yellow water. I'd like to refer it to anything else. No, it was very, very pale. That's the way he liked his tea. But coffee had to be absolutely black. Black, black, black. No sugar, nothing. And he'd say to me, "How can you drink that tea so strong like that?" And I said, "How can you drink that coffee like that?" It's funny.
So tell me about volunteering on the dig with Audrey and Peter.
Yes. They had this dig going in Dale, which is a little harbour in Pembrokeshire. And they'd been going there for years. And so I went with them. And there was an old fort there, Victorian fort, or pre-Victorian, because it was just after Napoleonic Wars, they thought that the French were going to attack. So they built three fortresses, I think, and this was one of them. So they used it for field studies, which Peter was one of the heads of Field Studies Council. And as you see from that thing up there, and that's how I got involved, going with them to the Field Studies Council things.
How did that come about, Molly?
Well, they suggested it, so...
But how did you know them by that stage?
Oh, because having meals with them and things, they talked about it.
But, sorry, how did your friendship with them develop?
Well, they invited me a few times around to their house with other friends.
Had you moved to Swansea by then?
I was in Swansea before they came back.
Oh, sorry. I see. Yes. So you met through friends of friends,
yes,
in Swansea?
The doctor went.
Sorry, I thought you just met them through volunteering, but
afterwards. No, it's their doctor in London. He asked me to get in touch with them because Audrey had been very ill, and would I see if there was anything that I could do to help them settle in and things like that, because he said that she'd been so ill. And he said, I don't think she knew how ill she was, so Peter knew how ill she was, but he always said that we don't let her dwell on it, you know. But then they were going on this trip to Dale, and I said, oh gosh, that sounds lovely. So I said, I always wanted to do archaeology. And he said, well, you don't have to be an archaeologist. I said, if you're interested, you know. So I did. I went along, because we had to pay for 2 weeks, which was very nice. Our course was the envy of all the others, because the others only had a week, but we had 2 weeks, so we really enjoyed our 2 weeks. Lying in the sun at lunchtime, while Peter and Audrey went off and had their lunch. It was lovely. But she would never come up to the dig when he was taking photographs, because he'd had a terrible ladder, a rickety old thing, which was about, I can't tell you how high it was. And he'd have to have a guy ropes with all of us hanging onto these ropes so that he could get right up onto the top and take photographs. It was frightening. And we always used to say, and Audrey said, I'm not cunning. I am not looking at it. He knows what I think. But we used to have our lovely party at the end of the dig, where everybody used to go to a nice hotel locally, which always did well by us. It was lovely. There were lots of people afterwards who were very sad that it had to end. So, you know, when Peter died, that was the end of it. Happy days.
It sounds like they were both particularly generous and warm and welcoming people.
Oh, very, very, absolutely. They were so charming, both of them. And after he and I married, when the students used to come and have a huge party for all the people at the Field Studies Centre. I mean, well, you probably both used to terrible loud music. God, I found it absolutely terrifying. I said to them, I used to hand him over to the students and say, they said, can we have him? And I'd say, take him, as long as you don't expect me. But I said, as long as you bring him back when it's time for him to come, when he wants to come. I don't mind. He didn't seem to mind the news, the noise. God, but I can't, I suppose it's part of being... Well, I'm deaf now, but those days I wasn't deaf. But it used to throb in my ears. What it does to you people now, I don't know.
So we're talking about the early 80s, are we, at that point?
Yes.
And you were in your 50s then?
Yes.
And Peter would have been...
70, 74, 75. Yes. Yes, 75 he was. But then by the time, I can't remember the last time we went there, he was about 81. No, yes. Yes, no, 83. Because he couldn't do anything after 83. I think that's probably the last time we went. I'm sure, yeah. Yes, sad. See, he couldn't walk or anything. And he used to drive. Never seen... He'd drive to Scotland, or, you know, like that. Drop of a hat. Never had an accident. But then he did have an accident one night. He was going to a meeting up in Dale. I said to him, please don't drive. Don't pass anything. He used to go on this road. It was a very narrow road. I said, you've got plenty of time now. Don't rush it. No, right. So he decided to pass this bus which was in front of him, or a big lorry, and of course it was on a hill. Coming over the brow was another big lorry or car. There he was in the middle. So this car coming down hit him. The car took off the side where I would have been. I should have gone with him. But had I been in a car, it would have been wiped out there. And shaved this door off. And he was left. Nothing. Nothing. But wrote the car off. Somebody phoned to me from the hospital in Haverford West. And they said, Mrs. Grimes, such and such a hospital. I said, don't tell me. But nothing to worry about, nothing to worry about. She said, he's all right. Said, but the car's a write-off. I said, oh, I couldn't believe it. I was in such a state. But he came home. Somebody brought him home the next morning. Cheery. Oh, dear. I was so cross, you know. But got away with it. He had to go in front of the magistrate and said, you know, you weren't doing the right thing. Because he had a coronation. Magistrates gave it to the coronation, I think. And he said, well, I'll allow you to go on driving. Well, which I thought I was so sorry about. So he said, you'll have to have a test in a year or so. Peter said, oh, it's all right. But he went and got another car. But I could see things. After that, I think it really shook him up, so that just Parkinson's took hold then. because he suddenly started where he couldn't walk properly without stopping. That's sort of strange. He said, I can't move my foot. So I said, oh. Then after a minute he could move his foot. I didn't realise it was part of Parkinson's, you know. But then it got... He had a few more little bumps here and there, which he never did, you know. He was such a good driver. And then he... We were going out shopping one evening. And we were going from the house. We should have just gone straight to town. But for some reason he turned right down to the beach. To the bay, and as he turned, so there's a car coming around the corner, and he went straight into it. Oh, I couldn't understand why he had turned, but I'm not a driver, and this man got out of the car, creating and carrying on, and the police came, and he said, "Yes, what's the time now?" He said, "What time, madam?" He said, "What's your version?" I said, "I'm not a driver, and I couldn't tell you." I said. One minute I was speaking to him, the next minute we'd hit this chap. I said, I have no idea, I don't drive. So I thought, I'm not going to give away, you know, that he shouldn't have turned down there, because he shouldn't. But anyway, he said he would sell the car after that. But he still went all the way up to Haverford West to sell the car. And I was in pens all day waiting for him to tell me that he was back. And I got home, he hadn't been. He said, I decided not to go today, I'll go tomorrow. And I've been through hell thinking about what he could have done.
Well, on that note, let's come back to perhaps earlier days of, yes. About archaeology. And, you know, obviously it's been huge in your life for lots of reasons. And I'm just wondering if you were... wanting to try and express why archaeology is really important to you and why you're keen to sort of engender that interest and passion in other people, what would you say?
Oh, well, I'd have everything to do with archaeology. You know, if I could do it in Swansea, you know, I would. But I think it's beyond me, you know, climbing down into always getting up. Because if I get down on the floor, I can't get up.
But why is it so important to you? How?
I don't know. I don't know. I've always been enthralled with archaeology of any sort, you know, digging away at Egyptian everything. But I never followed it up. Didn't know that you could do that. Just shows you don't find out things you don't learn, do you?
So what did it give you when you were working on archaeological sites?
Well, it gave me a thrill. I found actually a piece of pottery the first half hour I'd been there. So I was scraping away gently. He was a gentle scraper piece. He'd have a fit now if he saw the time team. Do you ever watch that? Phil. Trying things like this. But I want you to do that and do it gently. And I said, yes, right. And I thought it was funny, there's a change of colour there. So I said, called this foreman over and I said, Stan, what's that? He said, it's a piece of pottery. What have you done with the rest of it? I said, oh, God. He said, I've been looking for a piece like that for years and I haven't found it. And he said, "You, one day on you found a bit, but it was only a small piece. I wouldn't have known it was pottery except it was a different colour. But...
So it gave you a thrill, and what's that thrill about?
Having found something that was so ancient, and it was there, you know, there it was, and I found lots of flints and things like that, which I'm really quite into. I love flints. And I did find a very nice flint, and one boy on the site was a little bit. He'd been sent there by some. Society to say, give him some interest or something. So I said to him, look at that, isn't it lovely? Yeah, he said, and threw it into the bushes. Never found it again. I was so cross. But Well, it's just a thrill of finding something, you know, which means something. And of course, he was a prehistory man. He didn't like the Romans at all. Horrible people, he said they were. Nasty, nasty people.
So how did he feel then about being the one who stumbled across the temple of Mithras?
Well, I mean, he expected it, I think, as he knew about Rome and London, but the fact that it had made him more well known than he had been previously. He said, you know, to be known as a Romanist, he said, is not my thing. I'm a prehistory man. And of course, there's so many places around Wales, and it's all prehistory. More sites in Wales, I think, than most places. That's why he liked being back home, and he could do all that. Yes, so much I should have learned from him, but, you know, he was so busy travelling up to London so many times for meetings and things like that. But he was, and Dale, he used to really let his hair down. A friend, Dilwyn Miles, he's dead now, in the Welsh, a big man in Wales. They spent an evening together, he said. They talked until dawn, and Peter said to him, well, now let's go and have a chat. He said, we'd been talking all night. He said, and I couldn't wait to get to my bed. He said, no, let's go and have a nice chat. He never got tired, never gave in to anything. And he was always charming, always. And it didn't matter, young or old, whoever they were all lovely. He would be absolutely charming himself. That's strange. He used to say, my sister used to say, oh, he's just putting it on. I said, don't talk stupid. She was cross with me because she thought I was going back there to live. She said, no, he's taken you away from us. I said, I'm sorry. It's the way things are. I want to be there. Look after him. Yes. So I don't know whether you want his children's.
Yeah, that would be great, actually. Yeah, sure. And Molly, so it sounds like you watch stuff on the telly now about archaeology. Have you always followed telly programmes about archaeology and history and things like that?
Yes. I was telling us, do you watch Time Team?
Well, I've seen occasionally. I don't really watch much telly, but
I only watch it at night.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, it's great to have a telly, but I don't know. I just don't seem to watch much telly.
There was a nice job, Professor Mick Aston. He died suddenly because I used to watch him. He's such a nice man. And a couple of them have died on it. Henry, somebody.
Was there anything you
I can
to
send
ask?
You on the email, can't I? Their addresses.
Yeah, if that's okay. That would actually be great.
I was going to ask about the carnations. You say he always wore a carnation.
Always wore a carnation, yes, yes. He says he said in that book I gave you the copy of, they all dressed, all the students turned up with carnations without saying a word.
Do you know where that started, his carnation wearing?
He said that he was so ugly because he had flaming red hair, apparently. And he said, I've always been so ugly. And he said, it takes away from my face. I said, how ridiculous. Because apparently he had such a, well, before I met him, he had such a personality. Lots of women were after him. And although he'd been married 3 times, he wasn't one of the kind of men who went after women. You know, they went after him, I think. Yes. Because Audrey was always very jealous of him. Some woman had painted a portrait of him, and she always was sure that it had been naked. And he used to smile benignly, not say anything. He'd say, darling, there's no point in me arguing with you. If you want to think that, you can think it. They were funny together. They were so happy, it was lovely. I mean, I was happy, but we didn't have that same, you know, they were absolutely besotted with each other. It was lovely. But he was a wonderful person to be with. Yes, I wish, you know, he could have taken photographs of everything he did, really. Films of it, so that people could see what he was like. But his daughter loves him. I don't know about his son, he's very strange. But he's got lots of grandchildren. I don't think any of them is coming up to be an archaeologist. But they get quite artistic. He could have been a soloist of violin. He could have been an artist. Could have been an archaeologist. He chose archaeology. But he had his own string quartet in college, I think. And he was really gifted. And some of his books that he wrote, you know, his writings are beautiful to read because they're all in the museum now. So I haven't got any of them. Sorry, I'm just disjointed.
No, it's absolutely lovely. We will wrap up now, but just before I turn the recorder off, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't touched on?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my voice has just gone. I've been trying not to cough. Is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't touched on already, just before
we finish?
I don't
know what you want to know.
No, it's all been absolutely lovely. So, but it was just if there's anything I haven't thought of.
Yes.
I think that's good for me.
This boss of mine was so funny. After he retired, and he kept in touch with me. His wife died, his wife died after I married Peter, and a frantic phone call from Fred to tell me that his wife had died. He was in a terrible state. And I said to Peter, I don't know what he's going to do. Well, he's not your worry, he said. And then about a year afterwards, my boss met a lovely lady on holiday in Mallorca somewhere. And he broke us both up and said, oh, he's met the sweetest woman in the world. And Peter said, thank God for that. He said, you can stop worrying about him. I said, I wasn't worrying on my account, I was worried on his account. Same as worried about Peter after Audrey went. But he shut himself off for 6 months. Shut himself off from people. Apart from going to London or doing things that he had to do, he shut himself away and didn't go out. He said, I won't go out anywhere for 6 months. He said, I hope you don't mind. This is my mourning period and I want to be with her. So I said, no. Of course not. Didn't expect him to. I didn't ever expect him to marry me. But so it happened. Could have knocked me over with a feather duster. He asked me on just before we got onto the train. I didn't tell anybody.
Rich.
My friend said, you'll be back, you'll be back. I said, no, I don't know.
Which train? Where were you going?
I was going to Heathrow. Getting my plane to South Africa.
And what year was that?
1980. Because I'd bought it was cheaper to buy a return fare than it was to buy a single. Because, you know, the plane fares are like that. So I thought, well, anybody who's wanting to go to Britain can go to Britain with my return fare, not realising you can't do that. But as it happened, I had to use it. And my little niece at the time, she wrote a letter telling somebody that Auntie Molly was going to marry a professor, P-R-O-F-E-S-A. always kept that little letter. But he went out there a couple of times with me. But the last time he was badly affected by the Parkinson's, and he couldn't really do very much. Sad. And his writing got so small he couldn't even read it. But I had to sort out a lot of papers for him because he kept getting them all in the wrong bundles. It's 5-2.
Yeah, thank you so much, Molly. Actually,